Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Much Ado About Wrestling, the show that teaches you how to appreciate the theatrical world of professional wrestling. I'm one half of your inaugural, soon-to-be reigning co-host, Andrew Caberline, and I'm proud to introduce to you my hosting tag team partner for the evening, Mr. Tyler Ward. Tyler, say hello to the beautiful people.
Howdy, hello, how is everyone doing? How are you doing, Andrew?
I'm doing good. I've had a really long weekend. How about you?
Oh man, they just get longer. Like, they say it's the weekend, but like you're just running around like a crazy person all the time.
I think I did more physical activity and work in this weekend than I did during the actual week last week. But if anyone, if my boss is listening, then then forget everything I just said. And actually, I did a lot of work.
There's a lot of work done during that week. No, I think I'm right there. I mean, it's weird when on your weekends you feel like you have more of a schedule than during the week, of like you gotta really plan your time. Like, okay, I got 2 hours at home, and then I gotta head over here. I gotta do this. I got 3 hours over here.
Yeah, which is even harder when there's snow the ground. Yeah,
we did get a little snow, first snow of the season. I'm kind of happy about that, not gonna lie.
If you're listening to this and this is your first time listening to the show, which it probably is because this is the first official episode, you probably right now think this is a show about weather. It's not. This is a show about wrestling. And there are lots of podcasts about wrestling, but ours is a little bit different. Tyler, do you want to tell them why?
Yeah. So, I mean, the number of wrestling podcasts out right now, like, I can't even begin to explain to you. And literally, the ones that have just popped up in 2017 has been it's insane how many have come up. But anyway, ours we think is going to be a little different in that we can approach professional wrestling from a little different point than most people do. Both you and I, of course, we have a theatrical background. Yes. We both attended Virginia Tech with theater degrees. We have very expensive pieces of paper saying that we did attend that school.
I don't know where mine is, actually, now that I'm thinking about it.
Ooh. Oh, I got mine hanging on my wall, man.
If someone stole mine, please return it to me. Yeah. I'll give you the address later.
So we're both patrons of the theater arts. We're both actors. I know you yourself doing some writing and things like that. Yes. So I think we have a unique look into professional wrestling as an art form, much when it comes from like the theatrical sense, because I mean it is a show being put on.
I mean the ring is a stage, the entrance ramp is a stage. Now the backstage segments that we're not supposed to see is very much a stage as well. Really, all that wrestling is a big traveling theater piece that goes weekly 365 days a year. It never stops. It's the play that just won't end. And the part of this show, yeah, I meant that as a positive. I realize it may have not sounded that way. Yeah. Part of the idea of this show is that most wrestling podcasts, if you're maybe you're driving home for whatever holiday you're celebrating this season in December, and you're with someone else in the car, and you're like, oh, let's listen to a podcast. And you're like, oh, I want to put on a wrestling podcast. But this person has no idea what pro wrestling is, has never watched a second of it. Well, great. Our show is there to teach you about wrestling and teach you how to watch it in a way that you can appreciate it and understand what's going on. Because, you know, there's so many years of backstory and characters here that it is hard to jump in. It'd be like going into the middle of like last season of Game of Thrones, and you're like, wait a minute, when are they getting to the throne? I don't know. I don't watch Game of Thrones.
Who is this guy? Why is this guy important? Why did this person just attack this person?
Wow, that really works for both wrestling and Game of Thrones.
Exactly, yeah. it's an ongoing... excuse me, it's an ongoing medium. So I mean, it's a double-edged sword in that it's hard in that for someone who's not familiar with wrestling to just hop in without having any back knowledge, it's difficult, because I mean there's no start and stop point. There's not an end of a season or a beginning of a season that you can start and then kind of, you know, get acclimated to it. You just gotta jump in and kind of do the best that you can with it.
Yeah, and we are here to help you all.
Exactly. What we're hoping to do is kind of ease that transition, give a little backstory for, again, people who don't really watch wrestling, not entirely familiar with it, kind of ease them into it to better understand what's going on, the storylines, and why these things are important.
And wrestling, in and of itself, has its own language. So part of what we want to do every episode and what we're about to do is our top segment on the show. And this is going to be word of the day. We're going to teach you vocabulary. So don't let anybody tell you that this show isn't educational, because it is.
And we really hope that you'll use these words in your daily life, you know?
I do. I do, sadly. Sometimes people know what I'm saying and sometimes they don't. But that's okay. So our first word of the day, our very, very first one today, we want to teach you the word gimmick. Gimmick. The definition of gimmick, well, it is both a noun and a verb. One definition of gimmick is a persona a performer uses to better identify himself or herself to the audience, similar to character or Greek theater archetypes. Also, as a noun, it is a stipulation added to a traditional wrestling match to enhance the stakes in the story or secure a bigger draw. That was a lot of big words there.
Now, taking this completely out of context of just professional wrestling, let's think about this in terms of, Disney movies, something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Your gimmick within a Disney movie, say we're watching, What's a recent Disney movie that came out? I'm kind of behind on Disney movies.
I'll say, one of the last Disney movies I watched was Wall-E.
Wall-E's great. I love Wall-E.
Yeah.
Okay, mm-hmm. So the gimmick there, Wall-E's gimmick is yes, he's a robot and he doesn't speak, but his gimmick, if you look at it in terms of, the base, archetype almost, could be the quiet outsider. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Which right there, it's immediately an underdog character that allows the audience to root for. Someone mm-hmm. that the audience doesn't expect to win, to succeed in life, but you root for them. You want them to succeed because that's something it's a story that you want to see. It's fulfilling.
Wrestling works in the same way where your gimmick, your character can be as broad as that. It can be underdog. It can be hero. It can mm-hmm. be villain. But the gimmick can be even more specific and nuanced. Mm. And it can come down to, if you think of the great anti-heroes of TV, if you think of Don Draper or Walter White on Breaking Bad, his gimmick isn't just that he's an anti-hero, it's that he does bad things in the name of protecting his family, which is also a very common bad guy wrestling gimmick. Is mm-hmm. to be I'm only trying to win this title to provide for my family. I've got kids, damn it. And that would be a specific gimmick.
He's a prize fighter.
Yeah, we're talking about specifically Kevin Owens. If you look it up, for a long stretch of time, when he was first introduced, his character was simply, I need to pay for my kids to eat, and I will do anything. And does that make me a bad guy? Really?
Yeah.
Answer, it does. In most of the cases,
it does.
For him.
When you're powerbombing guys on the apron, it does. It does.
Oh, I can't wait till our word of the day is powerbomb.
So we can explain that one. Mm-hmm. So for the second definition of gimmick, this one pertaining very much exactly to professional wrestling, a stipulation added to a traditional wrestling match, a wrestling match to enhance the stakes in the story or secure a bigger draw. Your typical wrestling match, it takes place within a ring. Three count for a win, submission, disqualification, something like that. But when they add in the crazy stipulations, and what I mean by that, someone who isn't familiar to wrestling, maybe you've mm-hmm. heard of a cage match or...
Yeah, I feel like that would be the most common gimmick that people probably...
Yeah, the cage
match. If you've
seen
Spider-Man, the Tobey Maguire one, I feel like they up the stakes against Bonesaw by putting him in a cage.
They put Peter Parker and Bonesaw in a cage. Mm-hmm. So right there, that's a gimmick added to a match. Now, the idea behind that gimmick is whatever these two competitors could have done in a normal ring, by adding a cage set around the ring itself, it's going to add an extra layer of kind of things that we can see, spots that they can do that are going to increase the hype, just... more exciting action for the viewer to take in. So right there, it is adding a bigger draw. It's getting more people to be like, hey, I want to see this match. I want to see what happens.
Yeah, it's a way to raise the stakes immediately. And if you think about, this is a joke that I love that people talk about with the Fast and the Furious movies, that it starts as just like people are driving cars really fast. Well, now they're like fighting people in cars really fast. And it's like, how can we keep upping it? And it's like, we got to have the cars parachute. And we got to have the cars go underwater. And eventually, I guess they're going to have to take the cars to space. That would be a gimmick to say, like, oh, man, Fast and the Furious in space, I'm there. I don't know that I'd be there. I probably wouldn't. But that is, it's a similar use where if you feel like that the story you're trying to tell needs an extra oomph, that is where adding a gimmick to your match works. So why are we talking about gimmick as the first word? Because it kind of is this thing that you need to understand everything. It is a building block. But also because a particular gimmick that is dear to the hearts of modern wrestling fans returned last week. Mm-hmm. Last Monday on Raw, on Monday Night Raw on the USA Network, the fans were treated to the full-blown and proper return of last year's hottest character in wrestling, Broken Matt Hardy.
Now, I believe it's Woken Matt Hardy.
Yes, yes. He formerly was broke, now is woke. Mm-hmm. And while it seems that the character will be tweaked a little bit with the name change, the rest of what made this character a hit in a different federation appears to be remaining. Mm-hmm. Tyler, could you explain as best you can, I don't envy you this, as best you can to those who haven't seen him before, who exactly is Woken Matt Hardy?
Alrighty, so I'm going to go ahead and say just to strap in on this one, kids, because this is going to be a little tough.
It's going to be a bumpy ride.
So let's start with the basics. So Matt Hardy, he is a professional wrestler from Cameron, North Carolina. Has been wrestling for near 20 years now, give or take. Mm-hmm. Him and his legit brother, Jeff, were a tag team, have been a tag team in single acts within the WWE and other wrestling promotions for the past 20 years or so. They debuted back in the 90s for WWF at the time.
They're on an episode of That 70s Show from around then, if it gives you an idea of how old they are.
Yeah. Yes, definitely. But yeah, so he's been around for a long time, Matt Hardy, as a wrestler. And he's always been, again, a part of this tag team act with his brother, Jeff. Within the WWE, his brother, Jeff, when they broke up the team, actually went on to have a lot of singles success, winning the WWE Championship, the Intercontinental Championship, having a good run as that. And so during this time, Matt has had his own singles runs, but he's always kind of been seen as like a second to his brother.
I think it's fair to say he's been the Garfunkel to Simon.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's a very good one. That's perfect. But this went on for a while until last year. Well, I'm sorry, 2016. Well, technically it's still last year. 2016.
For a little bit longer. Yeah.
2016, Matt and his brother Jeff were wrestling for a promotion called Total Nonstop Action Wrestling, TNA at the time. They have since been renamed to Impact Wrestling and then something else.
To Global Force
and then back to Impact. They've just had a lot of name changes. But anyway,
they've had some rough stuff, yeah.
At the time, they were TNA Wrestling. And Matt, he began this character. At the time, it was known as Broken Matt Hardy. Now, the lead up to this is Matt was feuding with his brother Jeff. They were having some quarrels, some brotherly fights, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And this culminated in a match that they had at one of the TNA pay-per-views where Jeff defeated Matt. I believe it was something, it was like a cage match or
there was a gimmick to
it, exactly, to give it a little more hype. And so Matt lost this match and Jeff won. And so on the following week of TNA, Matt showed up, changed, you could say, broken, if you will. So the look for the character is, I've always thought of it as very Bride of Frankenstein, Matt, his hair is very long and disheveled. He has a large white streak through it, wearing very
unkempt,
almost gothic, long trench coats to look very creepy, if you will, honestly.
Yeah, he's like a man from another era.
Exactly,
quite
yes.
Literally.
Quite literally. And he adopted this quote-unquote British accent. He started talking in these really insane metaphors and things that it just didn't make a lot of sense to people at the time. It was very odd. It was very just no one had seen it before. And that can be a good thing in professional wrestling, but it can be very jarring at the beginning. It depends how well it's executed.
Yeah, there's another world where instantly this character, this gimmick, when it came out, would have been booed and people would have turned on it very quickly. But they didn't, because Matt has performed it in a way, from an acting standpoint, he goes for it the way that like Nick Cage goes for a role, where it's full commitments and you're like, oh, okay, I believe this.
Yeah,
I believe
yeah.
that this guy who says, you know, I am and actually like a spirit that has traveled through Alexander the Great and Genghis Khan and all these people, and I'm now just living in the vessel of this body, Matt Hardy. You don't go, what the hell? You go, oh, okay, I get that.
Yeah, so that backstory, the best way to kind of explain the broken gimmick in the simplest terms is that Matt Hardy, the human body of Matt Hardy, is no longer Matt Hardy. It is merely a vessel for the soul of this broken character who has been around for eons and ages and again has, you know, been around for thousands of years and has been residing within the body, the shell of Matt Hardy, and now that he is broken, this character, this soul is awake and is woken, actually.
Yeah,
and this character now is the one controlling Matt, the one speaking, the one you know, doing these actions, essentially.
Any good gimmick in wrestling has something easily identifiable and repeatable about it. You want to have a gimmick where the audience can finish your sentences. Something like, I'm sure even if you don't watch wrestling, you know who Dwayne The Rock Johnson is, our future president of the United States. And he would love to say, if you smell what The Rock is cooking. And that was his gimmick. It wasn't really a character. It was just, here's this funny thing I'm going to say. And eventually got to the point where he wouldn't say the whole thing. He would just say a bit and the audience would finish his sentence. And what that is for Matt Hardy, as broken or woken Matt Hardy, is to just chop his hand across the air and everyone yells delete, because that's what he does to his opponents. Not like every other wrestler who says, I'm going to beat you, I'm going to win, I'm going to show you who's boss. He has to use an archaic term because he is this archaic crazy character, and he has to delete people who are obsolete.
And that's another part of his gimmick. He uses very odd vocabulary that you just wouldn't expect to be used, like, obviously on a professional wrestling platform. So he says things like, I will delete the competition, or he terms his opponent obsolete, or
he'll purposely change the order and pronunciation of other people's names to become like less efficient. Like, referring to another promotion, Ring of Honor, will now become the Honorable Ring and stuff like that. The Bucks of Youth instead of the Young Bucks.
The Man of Three H's.
Yes, instead of Triple H. And I know what you're saying. This sounds ridiculous, but I think it's important to understand that really the reason why this character is so successful is because while Matt playing this character believes he is this reincarnated god of a person, He's not like Voldemort within the world of Harry Potter taking over that professor's head, right? He is more like the crazy guy in the corner telling you he's Jesus within the real world and everyone being like, oh, okay. So I think when you present him as this kind of ridiculous person but in a grounded world, that is what makes his gimmick so unique. It's almost like, for you moviegoers out there, it's less that he is Tommy Wiseau from The Room, and he's more being James Franco playing Tommy Wiseau. I mean, they both have weird, indistinguishable accents. They're both intentionally bad actors who speak in a way that makes no sense. I actually think he is the wrestling world's version of like a bad B movie, but a movie mm-hmm. that is so bad that you love it.
And I think and that's certainly why when this character was debuted in the summer of 2016, that it got so popular with the wrestling community. So they didn't just like air this character on TV and like had some matches and that was it. What really captured people's excitement with this is they started to do their kind of home videos of mm-hmm. professional wrestling, if you will. So the Hardys, they have a large like property in their home in North Carolina, and what they did was is they would, on their time off from filming for TNA in Orlando, they would go back home for, you know, a weekend, a week at a time, and they would film these 20-30 minute shorts that was within the Broken universe of Broken Matt Hardy facing his brother Jeff. And then once he finally defeated Jeff in one of their specials called The Final Deletion, Jeff then became Broken himself. He took on the character of Brother Nero. And then they developed this entire universe of characters just within these little 20-30 minute videos that they would just make at home. And I think mm-hmm. that right there is what really got the gimmick itself so popular with fans and everyone around, because they were taking such a crazy kind of out there concept but executing it in a way that you could tell that they were having fun with what they were doing, and they were enjoying the creation of it, basically. And that right there, I think, is a key to getting any gimmick over with the audience. When you can see that the performer is enjoying their job, that they are really having fun with what they are doing, I think that right there in itself is going to allow you to get behind it and want to see it continue.
Yeah. And this is something I know you might be asking, well, if this was such a big hit, then why has it been gone? Why is it returning? And part of the reason why this has taken so long to come back is that the Hardy Boys, Matt and Jeff, changed the federation that they were working in, and there was a big legal battle about who owns the character, mm-hmm. which is weird, because like if Daniel Craig was doing a James Bond movie and then suddenly was like, you know what, I want to go work with a different film company than whoever makes James Bond, but I want to be James Bond, you'd be like, of course you can't. Like, we have the rights to James Bond. But that kind of argument hasn't come up that much in wrestling. But that was essentially what was going on. And because of the kind of bigger fish to fry that TNA as an organization has going on, it seems like they've kind of given up and let WWE absorb this universe, not unsimilar to Disney absorbing the Marvel universe, I think.
Which I think is a great, that's right, there's a great comparison of why why we haven't seen it on WWE television. It's the essential, the idea of like who owns the property to this idea. It's basically like why you're not going to see Captain America show up in a DC movie, because literally behind the scenes DC does not own the rights to Captain America, therefore they can't legally like have that character show up in their product. Which is essentially what happened with that. WWE did not own the rights to the Broken character. Therefore, they couldn't allow it to be shown on their programming.
But now that they do have him, what do you think the best usage of him from here on out will be in this much bigger format where maybe you have to make a product that's a bit more digestible and mainstream? Mm-hmm.
Well, absolutely. So, you see, this was part of the... part of like the catching lightning in a bottle of how it succeeded the first time was that it was appearing on TNA, which is a much lesser promotion. Not many people have heard of it. I don't believe they even air on like a major cable television channel anymore.
Destination USA or
Destination
Pop
or
now?
Pop or something like that. Mm-hmm. But not too many people are familiar with it, and so They could push a lot more boundaries, I guess, in what they can do. And the downside with that, with moving to a large company like WWE, their main program, Monday Night Raw, is on USA Network. And they have a lot of, corporate sponsors and stuff that what they're allowed to show is limited. So right there, mm-hmm. that is going to not allow the Hardys as much freedom in terms of what they want to do with the gimmick, where they want the story to go. Because, I mean, from what the reporting, what the dirt sheets have said so far, it seems that Matt is going to have creative control in terms of where he wants to take the character within WWE. But still, what he's allowed to do on TV is going to be limited.
I think this is an exciting time, though, and it's something that we hope you watch with us, is that wrestling, much like any kind of medium that's written, like a movie or a book, has storyline archetypes that they follow. And we're in a rare form where, with Matt Hardy, especially with him having creative control on this creative, unpredictable character, is we have a moment where we're going to tune into Raw and actually have no idea what's going to happen, which is really few and far between, which is, I think, why people are so excited for this. Even if this run of this character doesn't go according to plan and isn't received very warm, I think people will just be excited that it was something that they couldn't predict.
For millennia, my soul has wandered through space and time, but not all who wander are lost. I am well-versed in all facets of the multiverse. I have studied at the Library of Alexandria, battled alongside Genghis Khan, danced with Cleopatra, held symposiums with Plato, and meditated atop the Great Pyramid of Giza.
So every character, every wrestler in wrestling has their own gimmick. Some of them are very well-defined, some of them are not well-defined. Some of them work, some of them don't. So right now, we would like to run through a series of a few people on the main roster in WWE who are having trouble finding consistency in their character, and we're going to suggest some ways that maybe we can turn them around. And first, we're going to start with Dolph Ziggler. Dolph Ziggler has been with the company for a long, long time. He is very tenured. He's really good at making other people look good. But the problem with that, even though he is so athletic and so, technically such a great wrestler, is that you watch and you don't believe him as a credible person who can win. So recently on another podcast, on Edge and Christian's podcast, he said that maybe it's time for him to walk away for a while from WWE if they don't want to use him in a prominent role. So my question, Tyler, is what is the best course of action for him if he actually does leave and go to a smaller promotion?
I think Dolph Ziggler is an interesting case. He has proven over time that he's great in the ring. He is technically sound, and that's why he's been in the role that he has been in for so long, of putting over the new guys. They know that he's a great performer and he can pull a decent match out of anyone. But I think that in the podcast that he was on, he said it himself the best, I think, where he said he enjoys his role as the quote-unquote gatekeeper, the person, you know, putting over these new guys coming in. Exactly. But the problem with it is that if he's in this role for too long, if he's in this role for too long and he's always losing, there's no point in it, really. Like, the new guy coming in, they're not really getting that much from this feud. If people know that Dolph Ziggler always loses, then having the new guy come in and beat him isn't going to really do anything for them. And so where he said himself, like, you know, maybe if he took some time away and then come back, you know, that could really help. And I think, honestly, the best thing for him would be to step away, but I don't even think he should be wrestling elsewhere. I think the best thing for Dolph Ziggler would be to step away from wrestling for a time. I know that he does improv comedy a lot, and I think he's been looking into acting and things like that. I think this would be a good time for him to take a step back from wrestling, kind of pursue these other things that he enjoys. And in the event, you know, he feels the desire to come back to it, maybe look at that possibility in 2-3 years from now. Because it's tough, especially now in wrestling, that the the rosters are just so full with so much talent that it's really hard to stand out. You can be an amazing wrestler like Dolph Ziggler, but when the rosters are stacked as they are right now, you've really got to be something special to stand out.
Mm-hmm. You make an interesting point, Tyler, that he's someone who has value in other industries. He does a lot of stand-up, he does improv, and I feel like, and he talked a lot about this on the ENC podcast too, that he takes whatever little time he has, because wrestling is always touring, even when they're not on TV, it's a lot of days out of the year. So he takes whatever time he doesn't use wrestling to do this other passion. And who knows, if he really explored it, maybe he could become a name adjacent to wrestling. And then I think if that happens, I know that WWE would want to bring him back and promote him, because it would bring whatever new fans he has over with him. Not unlike, you know, someone, a little actor, some of you may know, named Dave Bautista. A lot of people, I think, now just know him as like, oh, that's the guy who's in Guardians of the Galaxy. But he was a wrestler for a long, long time. But I think even though he was a very popular wrestler, he was a gatekeeper at times like Dolph. He has a much bigger platform now because he went away for a while. And now anytime he comes back, it is a big deal. And you're right, that might actually be better than just going around and wrestling against each promotion's best guy. Because if that's really the other option for Dolph, if he's like, I'm going to come into this promotion and make your guy look good, well, then he's doing the same thing he's doing on the roster now, just for lesser known guys on a smaller platform.
Yeah. And I think, and with terms of that too, like if he's going to a different promotion, if he goes to Ring of Honor or New Japan, if he puts on great performances there, he could get a lot of people, you know, like becoming Dolph Ziggler fans, but it's going to be a lot of people who are already professional wrestling fans. You know what I mean? But if he can expand into the stand-up world or start acting or something like that, it's possible he could bring new eyes to the product. And I think that itself is what WWE looks at the most.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a small thing that he has less wins at WrestleMania than Snooki from the Jersey Shore.
Oh, God, when you say it that way, oh, man.
Yeah, that is a... So another person who is finding themselves suddenly in chaos, or will soon, I think, is Jinder Mahal. Jinder is a wrestler who came from obscurity. He's been there just to lose, even more than Dolph. And suddenly this year, out of nowhere, he became WWE champion for 170 days, which is no small stretch of time in modern wrestling. Though he does have a rematch for the title against AJ Styles at the upcoming pay-per-view Clash of Champions, assuming he is unsuccessful there, which I think he will be, going into the WrestleMania season, what's the best way to use Jinder? What's the best way to get him on the card?
I don't know, man. That's a tough question. and I really like Jinder. I do, man. He's a guy who you can tell has really put in the work lately, and he's really like, you can tell he wants it. Like his run as champion, like it was not my favorite championship run. Like you could tell that he was giving it 100%, and there's something about that you just got to root for him. But honestly, I don't know, man. Going forward, I don't have too many high hopes for him. I could see him disappearing into the mid-card again. I could see him making an appearance Andre Battle Royal at WrestleMania.
That might not be a bad spot for him to win, especially because he came in second in that last year, and maybe he can exercise some demons.
If he wins it, that would be a great spot.
I'll tell you what his gimmick should be here, is that maybe he should be so afraid that he's going to become obscure again that he gets in his own way. Maybe you have him at the Royal Rumble be the second to last person in there and lose. Maybe you have him in some matches to like get into big high profile matches and he messes up at the last second when he should win. Maybe he becomes so inside of his head that he's defeating himself. That way he can still lose a lot, but we would care about what's going on.
Yeah. And I think that's a great way to endear him to the fans. I mean, he's been a heel character for his championship run. A bad guy, of course. I think that'd be a real good way to get the fans to come around to be on his side.
Yeah, you hear that, WWE? So you can send the check directly to me for that storyline.
Absolutely.
I can write for Jinder from the foreseeable future if you need me to. Yeah, so we have this thing that makes our show different from every other wrestling podcast that you can possibly hear.
Mm-hmm.
And besides being an actor and a great musician, our very own Tyler Ward is also an amazing inventor and engineer because he went to Virginia Tech.
Mm-hmm. You see,
can you tell them a bit about this invention that you have?
Absolutely. So you see, one of the mottos I like to live my life by is inventing the future. And so this invention I'm about to tell you about, this is called the Kayfabe 5000. Now, this machine that I have developed with the assistance of some of the wonderful engineers at Virginia Tech, this machine is going to allow you and I to enter the machine, and then while it is activated, the veil, if you will, the veil of professional wrestling shall be placed upon us, and we shall not be able to remove it.
Mm-hmm. So are you saying that we won't be able to tell what is storyline and what is real?
That's exactly what I'm saying, Andrew.
Oh, interesting. Is there any, like, potential brain damage that can happen from this machine? Are we the first test subjects?
Well, so you see, this is still technically what you'd call a prototype, so I'm not entirely sure.
John Cena's original gimmick?
It could be, without the bleached hair, so...
The prototype?
Mm-hmm. Without the flat top.
Mm-hmm.
So, we are going to hop in the kayfabe right now. I'm going to turn it on, and we're going to start to field some of the important questions that are going on in the professional wrestling world. And I think, you know, this is how you're really going to get the best answers to these inquiries.
All right, I'm ready whenever you are to flip the switch.
All right, here we go. One, two, three.
Oh boy.
Oh man.
That was much, much faster. Like, I feel like I actually, like, went somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. I've been working on that transition, but, you know, I gotta talk to some of the guys and see what we can do on it. But
yeah.
Oh man.
Stick that landing.
All right. So, if we're going to be fielding these questions, Andrew, I think it's best we just get right into it.
I agree. So, with the first one, in the recent episodes of SmackDown on Tuesday nights, who has been in the wrong? General manager of SmackDown, Shane McMahon, or I guess not general manager, but owner of SmackDown, Shane McMahon,
mm-hmm.
or best friends forever, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens?
I mean, look, I just got to come out and say it, man. Shane McMahon is making some very bad decisions right now, and quite frankly, I think it's insulting, really. Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens are just two good friends, best friends, if you will, just trying to get ahead in this very difficult business. You know, Kevin's got a family, he's got kids, and it's what Shane McMahon is doing to them, it's just not fair. I think he's abusing his power, and quite frankly, I don't like it.
Oh, okay. Well, allow me to rebut, if I may.
Mm-hmm.
How many kids does Kevin Owens have?
Two, I believe.
Two? How many does Shane McMahon have?
Three, I believe.
It seems like they're multiplying every time.
It seems like a lot. It depends how many are ringside.
So he has children, too. Have you ever fallen from 30 feet, Tyler?
I can't say I have.
Well, Shane McMahon did recently at the Hell in a Cell, and he expected to hit the very fleshy body of Kevin Owens. But
mm-hmm.
because him and Sammy are dastardly, Shane McMahon plummeted into a table. He could have died. The human body is not meant to fall that way. And I think that it's not hyperbole to say that we are not far from a world in where Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens are murderers. So I think, you know, that the fact that next week or this week on SmackDown that they're going to have a match where if they lose they can be fired, I think that's the most noble thing that Shane McMahon could do, because they should have been fired. They should have been arrested.
Oh, come now. You can't tell me that Shane McMahon is not abusing his power in a typical McMahon fashion that we have seen documented over the years by, I argue to say, every member of his family.
Well, you know, not every McMahon is the same. And I think that Shane, while he has done some bad things in the past, I think is really trying to run a business here. And it doesn't help when you have people on your show who are intentionally trying to make it worse, which is what I really think Kevin and Sammy are doing. And if, I think maybe if they just cared more about their own talent and like working on making themselves better rather than putting all their failures onto Shane McMahon, well, then maybe they wouldn't find themselves mistreated, which I don't think they are.
I see. Well, agree to disagree, my friend.
Yeah, more will happen in this. We'll add Daniel Bryan into this conversation probably next week.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So the next question we're gonna have, and this is a big one. So, hottest act in professional wrestling right now, the Bullet Club.
Selling more T-shirts at Hot Topic than Rick and Morty.
Absolutely, and that's tough. Too sweet. Oh, I'm sorry. One sweet.
Yeah.
Cease and desist. But so the Bullet Club has been on the social media outlets right now, advertising the idea that they want to sell out a 10,000 seat arena show.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here's the thing. This could be fairly difficult. The last time, I believe, a professional wrestling promotion outside of WWE sold out a 10,000 seat arena was in the 90s. I believe it was WCW back in the day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's probably, I would imagine that's probably the last company to do so.
So,
but
this
I'm not
is,
really good at math. So,
so this is a huge undertaking by the Bullet Club. But honestly, I mean, a lot of people believe they can do it. I, for one, I believe they can make it happen with the right card. So the question here is, Andrew, can you map out the perfect card that is going to sell out 10,000 seats?
Well, you know, the biggest name out there in wrestling, whether he's wrestling or not right now, is Daniel Bryan. And although he had been told by doctors that he had to retire because of his concussions, I think that he will make a miraculous comeback. And I think that he will be in the main event against Cody Rhodes. He will return to fight for the title that he made famous, the Ring of Honor World title, assuming that Cody Rhodes doesn't lose it to Dalton Castle at Final Battle this week or next week. Next week. But I think that Daniel Bryan, you know, if I believe what he's saying with his wife on Facebook and all of their Q&As, I think that he's actually been miraculously healed, probably because of the positivity in his credo.
Absolutely.
So I think
that
will be the main event.
Absolutely. I think the power of the yes movement could have very well healed his concussions.
What about the other members of the Bullet Club, though? Like, who do they end up on?
Well, you see,
who do they end up against?
I think this is a card where, in order to draw that number of people, you've got to have a lot of marquee matchups. Now, the Bullet Club itself has already got some huge names in it. You got the Young Bucks, Kenny Omega, Cody, of course, you know, already huge names in the indie professional wrestling scene. And I think that they can arrange a lot of some really dream matchups here. Honestly, what I think, if they're going to sell out 10,000 seats, we need one main event and one main event only. And I'm going to say it right here. It's going to be Kenny Omega versus CM Punk.
Oh,
well, how do you feel about
that? You say that because one of the three locations that they say they might want to hold this pay-per-view in would be in Chicago. Which is where I believe CM Punk is from. But the thing is, like, is he really a draw now after he got beat by Mickey Gall at UFC?
I think that is a good question. How are we feeling about Kenny Omega versus Mickey Gall? Could that sell out a 10,000 seat arena?
No, I don't think so. I think Mickey Gall actually lost in his most recent fight last week. So,
that
only makes CM Punk a worse draw. So I think maybe you're wrong on this one, Tyler.
Interesting. Well, you know what? I mean, I'm a Punk fan. Always have been. Probably always will be. I think that right there could be a huge draw. But we also are leaving out major players in the Bullet Club. What are the Young Bucks going to be doing on that show?
You see, I think this is what the real draw is that you take the two best indie wrestlers, in my opinion, the Young Bucks, and you have them go up against someone who's upset that they've been stealing his moves. And I think you have, coming out of retirement, coming out of being dead, I think you dig up the Undertaker and have the Undertaker handicap versus the Indie Takers. I think that is what will be on that card. I see no reason why that won't happen.
I do. That is, I mean, that's pretty good. And you would think that an entity like the Undertaker would return to kind of defend his honor, if you will. You got these two young upstarts stealing his moves and things like that. I can't see the Undertaker allowing that to happen.
I think, though, that like youth really plays a part, but how do you fight against someone who's dead? You bash in their brains. So I think that he will be de-zombified, and I think that the Young Bucks on this pay-per-view will literally decapitate the Undertaker. And I think that will put some butts in the seats.
I think you're right there. All right, Andrew. I think that these are all really good answers that we've come up for these questions, but I'm telling you, this is the first time we've attempted this, and I think it's time we got to get out of this machine.
I feel like I might vomit.
I'm not sure the repercussions that could happen if we remain in this, so I'm going to turn it off. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right, on three, one, two, sweet, and three.
Put that cigarette out.
It's still real to me, damn it.
We will ban you from the Summerfest.
You'll be banned from SummerSlam, is what you're saying.
SummerSlam.
Am I slammed out?
Hey, Colt Cabana, how you doing?
Oh, my God!
Oh, my gosh. Oh, I need an aspirin.
Whew. Or maybe that two. That was intense, man. Whew. I mean, so far, it seems like it worked, but yeah, I'm going to have to run a few more tests on that. It seemed a little odd there.
Normally, we agree on stuff, and I feel like there was a few times where you were rude to me in there, Tyler.
I know. I can't believe that. I'm not sure what came over me.
Well, I guess we'll have to recalibrate and try that again next week.
Absolutely.
I will say,
if
you're listening and you have some questions that you want us to answer from within the machine, please go find us on Facebook or on Twitter and just drop the question to us, and we will work in some questions into this mailbag.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we've got time for one more segment on the show, and this is the Undercard MVP. This is where we want to praise someone who we haven't talked about yet, maybe someone who goes unnoticed. Do you have someone this week you think absolutely killed it, Tyler?
I absolutely do. And if you would look at your screen, Andrew, I'm going to be sending you a large PowerPoint presentation.
Ooh, I'm on a Mac, so that's going to be tough.
My undercard MVP this week has got to be Drew Gulak. Man, he is doing some great work. Like, 205 Live it's never been my favorite show that WWE has going on.
And this is the brand
for
where only the cruiserweights fight, only people under 205 pounds.
Yes, and it premieres primarily on the WWE Network. It's not on the USA Network or anything like that. It's in an odd time slot. It comes on Tuesday nights after SmackDown, so around 10 p.m. It's an odd time slot.
In the arena, it's after people just saw their most favorite people finish their storylines, and then you're expected to sit and watch people that they're less familiar with.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, so it's a tough time slot for them, definitely, and it's never done that great in their ratings on the network, but I think it's been it's a matter of, obviously, they're working with the time slot and the kind of already tired crowd, but it's also they haven't had a real draw in terms of superstars on 205 Live. Mm-hmm. They did very well with Neville's run before he exited the company.
Took a sabbatical.
Yeah. Took a sabbatical. But man, I gotta say, Drew Gulak is doing some great work on 205 Live. It's just his PowerPoint gimmick is hilarious, and he executes it so well. And I'm very excited to see how it goes. I'm excited to see a potential face turn in the future for him.
He's too likable to be a villain, but it's every person who you've seen in The Office who wants to use PowerPoint in a presentation that maybe doesn't need it, but they spend all day at their office making sure that PowerPoint looks good. I think all of us know someone kind of like that.
Absolutely, yeah. I'm on Drew Gulak's team for this one.
Oh, make no mistake about it. Akira Tozawa brought that upon himself. You see, he wasn't listening, and he interrupted me. And if he hadn't,
he would have heard proposal number 9. That's right, proposal number 9 of my PowerPoint presentation!
Yes!
Who are you looking at this week for the undercard MVP?
My undercard MVP is someone else who I think has really used the power of gimmick to make himself popular, and that's Elias. He's someone who's been on the roster for a while now. He's someone who no one cared about. We saw him wrestle live once, and I forgot that until last night. He is very unforgettable. Very forgettable, rather. And he's taken this gimmick, which was just a drifting, ultra-serious guitar-playing guy.
Hobo? I mean, like, is that...
Yeah, he's more of a hobo. He doesn't really play many chords. And he's turned that into the most insanely fun crowd participation part of the show. He comes out, he insults the crowd, is like, you have to sit through my crappy concert, and just allows people to boo. And he really soaks it in, and he's gone from being this really wooden performer and really wooden wrestler, really, to someone who is very funny and who has to take this similar kind of bit each week and keep adding to it. And I think he's really done it admirably so far. And I still don't particularly care to watch him wrestle at all, but it's one of those segments now that week after week I make sure that I see, because I want to see what way he came up with to insult the audience this time.
You know, Kurt promised me some worthy competition. But until then, I've got a song to sing. Everybody in LA wants to be a celebrity. But the kids are pathetic, and the parents are big phonies.
So that is about all the time we have this week. We should, speaking of like booing, we should talk about any kind of plugs that we have right now. I know that you probably don't like Elias's music, but you might like Tyler's. You have a bit of an announcement for this week, don't you?
Yes. So for plugs, my band Turbo Mansion, we actually just finished recording our third EP that we have released and put up on our Bandcamp. It is at turbomansion.bandcamp.com. If you guys want to go check it out, it is free to download. We greatly appreciate any support or anything like that. And we're
we'll
going to have
put
some,
a link to that in the show notes.
We'll put some link into it, and we're going to have some more updates coming up as well, new t-shirt designs, things like that as well.
I'll also say keep listening to podcasts by Critical Point Theater Broadcast. I run that. I'm the head honcho of the podcast, which is my gimmick within there. We've got some more episodes coming up soon. You're about to see a season finale for The Grayscale. That's going to be really, really good. I know, because we just recorded it before me and you started talking.
Nice.
Yeah, so that's coming up. Again, if you have questions that you want us to answer, if you have words that you think that we should use or matches we should look at on the show, you can let us know at muchadowrestling.com. On Twitter, we are at adowrestling, which is also what we are on Facebook. So let us know. We want to answer your questions. We want to come to a town near you.
Absolutely.
So give us like a place to stay and some money and some stuff.
There you go. I'll create a sweet PowerPoint for you.
Yeah. I got it. You know, I have Mac, and I hate their version of PowerPoint. I hate numbers. It's
Windows
terrible.
All the way, man.
Yeah. Ugh. Mac's not going to send me anything for free now. Okay. Well. With that, make sure to go watch Raw tonight. You'll get to see Elias. You'll probably get to see a PowerPoint. You'll get to see Broken Matt Hardy with us, and we'll try to tweet out during the show too, so follow around with us. So until next time, thank you for listening with us. I hope you've had a lot of fun. And as the great William Shakespeare once said, if wrestling be the food of love, play on.